Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Season 7 of Homemaker Chic Podcast.
Yeah, baby. What was that?
This is, dancing. You know, this is not very chic to say, but I'm already sweating with excitement.
Yeah, I got a little stash going on here.
It's also like 100 degrees today, so I'm just sweaty. But I'm also sweaty because I'm so excited to be here with you. Hi.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back.
You too. Ladies, I'm Shay Elliott, and I am the host of Homemaker Chic Podcast. And I am joined by Angela Reed, who is the co-host of Homemaker Chic Podcast. We're co-hosts.
Hello. We're co-hosts.
I still don't ever know how to say that, but here we are regardless.
Okay.
Podcast pros now, really, because we're on season 7.
Yeah, baby. We're professionals. Can I adjust my bra strap now?
Yeah.
I just like got my wedgie out before we started and now my bra strap.
Speaking of being professional. So this is the podcast, ladies, where we are rescuing the art of homemaking from the daily grind. And just because we're hosting this podcast does not mean that we have it figured out. It means that we are in the trenches right alongside you as we learn how to better manage our homes and find joy in our homes and love those around us.
I was going to call you today and say, like, I just did XYZ, so I'm officially an adult. No, wait. I still have to find my debit card. I still don't pray for my kids enough. There's still some clothing on my closet floor.
Yep.
Scratch that.
Never mind. We still
I don't know what it was. I did something like really far in advance and like, oh, I got dinner going before we sat down to record. And I was like, you got this. Get it, girl. Get it, girl. Whoops. Still don't know where my debit card is.
Well, we're so excited to be here with you for season 7. We have a ton to cover today because we have our winner from our giveaway from season 6. They're going to get a basket of goodies from all the sponsors, which is fabulous. Boom. We have to announce our new podcast theme for season 7.
Yes.
We have a guest joining us for the second time around.
A fabulous guest.
So, I mean, where do we even start?
Well, I think it's only fair to announce the winner.
Okay.
Because that sort of blew up Instagram.
Okay.
And if you're not following on Instagram, like the goal was 10,000 and we're almost there. So do your homemaking due diligence. Forget looking for the debit card. Go follow us over on Instagram at Homemaker Chic Podcast.
Yes. Do that. We had, I think, over 1,100 entries for the giveaway. Which is amazing.
Some of you were very enthusiastic. I think you went through your Christmas card list.
We appreciate it.
We sure do.
We appreciate it. We randomly selected a winner. And by random, I mean, scroll.
Blind.
Put my finger down. And the winner
illegal.
Is Jacqueline Henderson _. So Jacqueline Henderson _, can you message us, please, on Instagram?
No, don't do that.
Nope,
email,
don't do that.
info@homemakerchicpodcast so we actually see it.
Duh.
It's going to be a lot better.
Okay.
Jacqueline Henderson _ info@homemakerchicpodcast.
Do that.
.com.
And real fast, before we dive in today, ladies, if you would like to be reminded, we get so many questions every season. Here we are, season 7. Where are the show notes? What was that book you mentioned? What was that link? I don't have the coupon
code.
What
lipstick color do you wear? Yep.
Help us help you. And go visit homemakerchicpodcast.com. On the homepage, if you scroll to the bottom, there's a little sign up for our newsletter box. Put your email in there. We're not going to spam you. What we are going to do starting this season is send out a little email every Friday. It'll have the links to both Monday's and Thursday's episode and all the show notes. All the links will be right there. Anything that's mentioned, any books mentioned, any people mentioned, any songs mentioned. We wish we could keep up with all the emails and messages saying, hey, what was that cello player you mentioned? Or what's that perfume that Angela wears? But it's just not physically possible.
Right. So it isn't. Help
it's
us.
Just simply not.
Please
so go visit homemakerchicpodcast.com. Scroll to the bottom, enter your email, and then we will send an email to you each Friday with the links so you don't miss
get a little love note. Yeah. And we're also another reason to follow us over on Instagram on Fridays is because we're going to start having a little fun over there. Shay and I are going to be going live and just doing a little weekly rehash. So you're definitely going to want to be a part of that. Just a little quick hello.
Hello. Please do that. Please do that. Okay. That's business out of the way. Let's cue the wine music.
Let's do it.
We got to talk about this bottle I have, and then we'll share the season 7 theme.
Okay.
Season 7, first interruption, down in the books. Okay. Now, here we go.
Okay. You say one.
Now I cue in the white music. Excuse me. Pardon. So, ladies, please bookmark this page. dryfarmwines.com/homemakerchic. Dry Farms has been with us, has been sponsoring the wine segment since day one of Homemaker Chic. We invite you to pour a glass with us because this is still what we're drinking. And frankly, we're not going to drink anything else because here at Homemaker Chic, we drink Dry Farm wines. Dry Farm Wines sources wines from all around the world and delivers them to your doorstep or to your local liquor store if your state doesn't allow. So you can coordinate that easily with your liquor store. So
Michigan and whoever else you are.
Yeah, Michigan. Boo. What's your problem?
Get with the program.
Dry Farm Wines are beautiful wines that are sourced from boutique, family-owned, small vineyards from all around the world. This is a very chic way to fill your wine cabinet.
Is that my cue?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna pour.
Boom. You pour while I tell them about pure natural wine being so rare and getting to enjoy a bottle. Ooh, look at Shay go. Is a delectable treat. So we want you to enjoy classy, clean wine with us as we dive into today's topic and every topic this season. Get stocked up. Dry Farm wines are sugar-free, additive-free, and chemical-free. And on top of that, when you purchase Dry Farm wines, you are supporting small farmers from around the world who are doing things the old-fashioned, better not more way. And we dare you to argue with that. They are doing this through organic and regenerative agricultural practices. You can stock your own posh wine pantry with these beautiful wines from around the world. And now, Shay, I would like to know, because mine just got dropped off, like right before we started recording. So I don't have any cold bubbly, so you're making me a little jelly.
Well, I wanted to celebrate. Sipping? So
I know.
Patrons.
Salty.
Look at Look how aggressive these bubbles are.
Looks like it is aggressive champagne.
Somebody dropped a tummy tap seltzer in there.
Is it champagne? What is it?
Okay, so I want to tell you about this. So I have a bubbly subscription with Dry Farms, which means every month they send me, well, I actually have two, let's be honest. So I get bottles of bubbly every month. But you know me, I love bubbly things, okay? So this is a bottle of a Frizzante.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That one's good.
But this one I need to tell you about. I'm going to pull up my notes because, listeners, do you remember how last season Angela told you guys about the dock wines and how so many of you found that really helpful? So let me open up my notes here because I do want to share this with you. This particular winery,
You can do it.
Paltrin. Paul Trinieri. That's not how you say it. I'm so sorry, Italians. This is a winery, and it's run by a husband and wife, Alberta and Barbara. They are the fourth generation in this family to farm this winery. Mm-hmm. And so it's a husband-wife team. It's only 20,000 bottles a year. That is such small production. It's striking. And this is a wine. It's, let me find the word of it, Lambrusco. So we've heard of Lambrusco. A lot of you have probably heard of Lambrusco. Lambrusco is a certain type of a grape variety. So this is 100% Lambrusco. And this is one of the top rated Lambrusco wines in the entire world. Isn't that
fabulous.
Crazy? So
fabulous.
Most all Lambrusco is grown in the Emilia Romagna region of Italy, which is like, did I nail that? Why are you smiling?
So good.
Okay, I'm really good at it. It's in northern Italy. So Lambrusco used to refer to a single grape variety, and now it's basically a group of grape varieties that are grown to, you know, do these bubbly reds. So that's typically what it refers to. But so this is called Radice. By Paltrin, how would you pronounce this?
Paltrinieri.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely delicious. So it's a sparkling rosé. They call it a sparkling red. And cheers.
Cheers. Okay, so bookmark it. Mm-hmm. tryfarmones.com/homemakerchic. And the first time you order, you are going to receive a bottle for a penny. So try some red, white, rosé for the summer, bubbly, whatever classy wine you enjoy, Dry Farm has it. What's wrong? No,
it's
more
just
penny?
So good.
Oh, that you were like, no, stop.
No.
Like, no, it's just so delicious.
It's so delicious. It has a 95-point rating, this Lambrusco does.
Yeah, I had it last month. I'm actually hoping it's in my box right now.
It's just so fabulous. Super happy to have a bottle here right now to be celebrating this with you.
Okay, so there's not very many things in life that have a 100% guarantee. Shay and I, Homemaker Chic, maybe. But no. Dry Farm Wines for sure. No.
Death and taxes. Death and taxes.
Happiness guarantee, Shay.
Oh.
Never
You're
mind.
So witty. Never mind. Yes. And
all right, so.
Okay. While we are sipping real fast. Mm-hmm. Ladies, visit dryfarmwines.com/homemakerchic. Use that link because you get a bottle for free with your first order. You can do reds, you can do whites, you can do mix, you can do bubbles, you can do a one-time order, you can have them ship it monthly. Super simple. If you don't love a bottle, call them. They'll send you another one. Easy as that.
That's better than Trader Joe's.
Better than Trader Joe's. Okay, before we welcome our guest, we have 2 minutes. We have to announce season 7. Theme. Go ahead.
Dead air.
Well, Angela and I went round and round about this because we had a beautiful end of season 6 celebration call with our patrons, and it was fabulous. We've been sort of encouraging everybody to pull yourself up a little bit by your bootstraps, right? The Calvary's not coming. It takes work. Just bear down, get in the nitty gritty of it. And we thought it was time for some beauty.
Yeah, it's summer. Pour the champagne.
Pour this
Find
champagne.
The romance.
That's right. And that's what we're encouraging you to do this season, is to see the romance. Not when everything's perfect.
Yeah.
Not when you finally have your dream house or when everything's lined up and there's no struggles.
All the weeds are pulled. Nope. Beauty in the mundane.
Exactly. And we're going to be working the same alongside you. We're going to be trying to train our eyes this season to really see the beautiful moments, to see the beauty that surrounds everything that we get to do as homemakers, and to savor that. Because ultimately, we think about homemaking as kind of this bank account, right? And it takes deposits and it takes the other thing, withdrawals.
You got this, Shay. You are amazing.
Seeing the beautiful things and taking the time to appreciate. Maybe it's just a clean sink when all the dishes are done. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just the day when your roses bloom. Maybe it's the day where your kids sleep in a half an hour and you get a little bit more quiet time. But those little things add up. And if we have the eyes to see them, they are deposits in the bank account. So that when you need to take a withdrawal, there's something to draw from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Shall we?
We shall.
Okay.
Let him in.
Let him in. Let the man in.
So if our theme for this season is see the romance, then I think that it would behoove us to even see the romance in ourselves. What if our friends, what if as homemakers, we were described as the happiest of creatures, having uncommonly brilliant skin and being loving, lovely and blooming and healthful. And I think that is a wonderful idea. I think sometimes we're so focused outward, we forget to see ourselves as romantic, beautiful creatures that deserve care. And so we thought that having Brian Kozlowski on today to talk about his book, and this is for the patrons, The Jane Austen Diet, would be a wonderful way to kick off the season. So welcome back, Brian. We are so happy that you are here.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to be back. Thank you.
So happy.
It is. It's very good. I've been devouring this book. I'm actually going through it for a second time. Although I will say, if anybody has not read Jane Austen, such as myself, one, you know, I'm piecing together characters, and I want you to know, Brian, that I'm trying. So I'm listening to the entire Jane Austen collection on Audible right now.
Okay.
So.
Well, a lot will now start clicking.
I was just reading it again yesterday because I read it a few months ago, and you know, so many fabulous descriptions of Elizabeth Bennet. And I thought of you, Shay. I'm like, darn that girl. She better be reading these books.
I am. Well, I'm having somebody read them to me.
Okay.
But that's okay. That's okay. Okay. Brian, if anybody missed Brian, his interview before and his other book, that was season 5, I believe. So kick back in the episodes a bit and find our interview with him. But you are now an official friend of Homemaker Chic because this is your second appearance. And so why don't you give the listeners sort of a brief bird's eye view of the Jane Austen diet?
Sure. Yeah. Well, first off, it might sound like a complete joke or like a gag book gift you might give to a friend, but it is actually something very real and something very solid. And a part of Jane Austen that we often overlook. I mean, I'm guilty of this. I was a huge Austen fan for a long time, and I didn't really see her outside of the narrow confines of a romance writer, right? I mean, a brilliant one, but that's kind of where her genius ended for me. And that all ended when I, several years ago, when I was nearing my 30th birthday, and I was kind of experiencing somewhat of a mini health crisis in my own life. And I was starting to dig pretty heavily into scientific research papers, looking at, all right, what's the latest discoveries in health and wellness out there right now? I really wasn't interested in fad diets or anything like that. At the same time, because I'm slightly an erratic reader, I was going back kind of like you, Shay, and we're not going back. I know you're not going back. You're just starting. But I was going back and I was listening to audiobooks or reading them myself just in the evening, reading through Jane Austen's really collection. And that's actually when it happened and when it hit me that so many of the things I was coming across, I'm sorry, there's just like a huge jet just past my house. So many of the things I was coming across in these health books and these quite academic, you know, scientific health books, I was also at the same time coming across in Jane Austen's novels. Now, of course, they were presented in like a story format. They, you know, they were cleverly interwoven into her stories themselves. But the gist of those ideas and the gist of those wisdoms were almost identical. And this happened so often that I knew something is going on here. This can't just be a fluke. And that's when I really seriously started digging into both her novels and her experience as a writer, what she was interested in. And, again, this is not a side we often think of Jane Austen as, but she was massively interested in health and not only health, but seeing what the trends were at the time. I mean, she was a great observer of life, right? And also, and that extended beyond just how people fall in love or how people click together. It extended to how do people live a good, healthy, well, vibrant, energetic life. That was also a prime importance to her. And there was a lot of weird, crazy trends going around in the Regency era, just like there are today. And she was very interested in bringing people back to an older, more historic, almost pre-industrial way of looking at health. And that's sort of what the book is about.
Mm-hmm. I love look at the whole story of your health when you encourage people through Austen's holistic eyes. Hop off the scale and start noticing the various body clues Jane recognized as being a part of the bloom of full health. Do you remember if it was a particular passage that you were reading at the time that jogged your mind to the scientific journals and articles that you were reading?
Right. Actually, the very first thing is I started noticing one of the major patterns in Austen's novels, and you kind of have to read them all, you know, at the same time to find these patterns. But one of the big ones are her healthiest characters, when they wake up in the morning, they make a concerted effort to get outside and not necessarily to exercise, but simply to be outdoors. Now, this is pre-breakfast. This is happening all before breakfast occurs. And so leisurely strolls are a big part of how Austenites sort of greet the day. And I wasn't doing that as kind of a hermit writer here in my office. I was waking up, going into my office and starting the day and, you know, wondering why I had terrible energy levels and I couldn't fall asleep at night. So I started following this very simple pattern and thinking, okay, if she's right here, maybe she's right on going forward. And it was just this very simple but miraculous turnaround in my life in terms of how better I felt. And of course, there's so many scientific reasons of why that works and why our bodies need those daylight cues, and that we don't get if we shut ourselves in our house. So that was actually the first thing that triggered me to thinking, oh my goodness, like there's some cool stuff going on here.
So is that what you do now? You get up and you go for a walk?
I do. I used to. Now I get up and I water all the plants.
Okay.
Which takes now quite a long time because it's summer here in Florida. And so it's summer in Florida is sort of like winter up north. I mean, getting your plants to survive summer in Florida is a daily effort. So
sure. Why do you think it's so hard for people in our culture to sort of just stay between the rails a bit? Because one of the sort of overarching themes of this book is think of the whole person. So in my mind, I immediately went to, you know, people who will do like a green smoothie diet. Okay. Does it make you lose weight? Does it whatever, do something to your skin? Maybe, but there's no enjoyment. There's no sitting down with company. There's no putting your hand to preparing something. There's no setting the table. Like these things that actually could be argued. And I think that Austen does argue this and you argue this in the book. Like when we're looking at this from a whole person perspective, there's a lot more going on than just eating the right amount of calories so that you can be the right weight. There is a whole person approach. There's the happiness of the heart as the music plays, right? As the sunlight comes in the kitchen window, whatever that may be. Why do you think that's so hard to accept as what's going to work?
Okay, so Austen, this is really what Austen grappled with too, and that, you know, we often think the Regency era was some sort of idyllic, really simple time. And we get that vision of it through really Jane Austen, because it honestly wasn't like this. This was, think about, this is the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. And so agricultural yields were starting to boom in England at this time. There was a rise in the leisure class. And so it truly was an age of excess. And people, just like today, really go wacky when they live in an age of excess. They don't know how to find that happy medium at all. And they and the important thing is that what Austen was noticing is that people were starting to be very a bit too narrow when it came to looking at health. See, this was like this was even the first time where health became very narrowly looked at in terms of matters of weight. Austen didn't believe that at all, or in terms of you have to have a certain body size to be considered healthy. That sort of all started coming into the whole Western civilization during at this point. And Austen wanted to get people back. Okay, first of all, let's think about health, and let's remember that health comes from this old English word meaning whole, like just like you were saying. It doesn't mean just concentrating on a scale, you know, a number on a scale, or what you're eating or how you're exercising. For Austen, it was truly the whole complete picture of health. It's she uses that term actually in Emma. And so for her, you know, yes, does weight matter? Yes, but mood matters just as importantly. Does food matter? Yes, but you know, are you starving yourself, or do you have a healthy appetite? You know, do you have a healthy relationship with food? Even some things like, how does your skin look? How are you feeling? How are you interacting with others? What is your relationship with nature like? You know, so all of these things were so important for her to piece together, and that's sort of her overall philosophy about health. And I think I'm not sure. I mean, going back to your question, why people have such a problem with it, but just time and time again, I mean, whether you look at the Romans or whatever, whenever a society is dealing with an age of excess, they either start overeating or they start getting really lazy, or, you know, so Austen was trying to help readers come back to a much more saner, more historic way of looking at pretty much everything, not just love, you know?
So real fast, let's talk about what those points of health are. So you sort of list them out in the book, and you do such a great job of pulling passages from the book. But what is a healthy, whole person in Austen world? What are we aspiring to here?
Right. Okay. So a healthy, whole person in Austen world would not ever starve themselves, for one. Enjoy food, enjoy the pleasures of food, but they also remain somewhat healthily detached from food. So they're not constantly thinking about it or prioritizing it. So there's that one. A healthy person would move a lot. They wouldn't necessarily exercise strenuously, but they would walk a great deal and keep exercise mainly in a very happy place in their mind. So Austen only uses very comfortable, positive language when she talks about exercise. She's trying to get people back to, okay, this is something that you should be incorporating effortlessly into your life. This is not something that you do between 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon kind of thing. Cause that's also, that's also a trend that was happening at the time, where exercise was becoming medicalized, you know, and prescribed almost like a drug that you should take every day. A healthy person has a composed mind. I mean, understands that thoughts and your feelings are as important as the food you put in your body or the exercise you put out. So, Austen would never see someone who is thin or who, you know, is sort of satisfying the society's, picture of what health should be, or who is, you know, in terms of bodily, and if they're and if they're not happy, or if they're, you know, irritable all the time, she wouldn't consider them healthy. So, you know, there's that. There's the way, and here's something I love. I mean, so when it comes to thinness, there's actually no character in Austen's novels who is described as extremely thin and being healthy at the same time. because there was, again, this almost starvation diet trends of the time. And this is the first time where you see the historic concept of what makes beauty, beauty, especially feminine beauty, be restricted to incredibly narrow terms and a thinness standard that was almost merciless. And it's sort of the same way we grapple with today. Look at any runway model. It was very much similar in Austin's era. So this was the time that celebrated something called the tubercular look, which pretty much glorified the sickly look. To get so thin, you know, you almost look like you're wasting away. You have tuberculosis. This is something that even Marion Dashwood, and since it's nobility, she kind of buys into at one point in the book. She thinks that that sickly look is kind of going to win Willoughby back at one point. So but Austin wants the readers to remember that beautiful, healthy bodies naturally come in a very wide range. She's very careful to never praise the same beautiful body type twice. And so, you know, there are people like, let's say, Harriet Smith and Emma, and she's described as being very pretty, being very healthy, but she's short and she's plump. You know, so there's Mrs. Croft in Persuasion, and she's described as having a very square figure, but she's, again, one of the most healthy, most energetic characters in the book. So, A healthy Austinite would be someone who knows what their natural body type is and is comfortable with it and doesn't sort of attune to these really merciless standards of our day.
The Elliott Homestead Cooking Community is a sponsor of Homemaker Chic Podcast because, frankly, homemakers have to cook. This is for home cooks out there who would love some new inspiration, ideas, and motivation in the kitchen. Each month, you'll get 5 new recipes shipped to your door or to your inbox, whichever you prefer. Recipes will range from entrees to side dishes to desserts to sourdough breads and everything in between. I'll also guide you through the month's recipes with a long, in-depth cooking video showing you new skills and encouraging you as you give these recipes a try in your own kitchen. And lastly, you'll be invited into our exclusive community of like-minded home cooks where you can ask questions, share your successes, and gain inspiration from women just like you. The Elliott Homestead Cooking Community is here to inspire and nourish your family with whole food recipes, price-conscious recipes, from scratch recipes that are designed to enjoy. We're going to teach you to bake. We're going to teach you to use sourdough. We're going to teach you to ferment things and to try new ingredients. Visit cook.theelliotthomestead.com to join as a member today. Visit annaluisa.com/homemaker for 10% off our favorite jewelry. That's ANALUISA. Homemakers, Ana Luisa is partnering with us for Ultra Feminine Friday. So if you're looking for simple, feminine jewelry to wear at home or on date night with your day dresses to church on Sunday morning, then we invite you to try the beautiful pieces of jewelry from Ana Luisa. Rings, earrings, necklaces, and more starting at just $39. So there is something for every budget. They are designed in small batches with recycled materials whenever possible. These pieces are timeless and affordable and fall under our podcast motto of better, not more. New jewelry collections are released every Friday, so celebrate our hashtag Ultra Feminine Friday with us by visiting annaluisa.com/homemaker for 10% off, or of course, visit the show notes or website for a direct link. And if you're following over on Patreon, you can see these beautiful pieces in person. Visit annaluisa.com/homemaker for 10% off. And don't forget to join us and Ana Luisa for Ultra Feminine Friday over on Instagram.
Angela and I get asked about our skincare routine a lot. The secret is Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co. is your one-stop shop for all things natural and organic that are free from GMOs, toxins, fillers, any artificial colors or fragrances, or synthetic chemicals. This is a company created by our friend Emily, who has taken quality ingredients to an entirely new level. Whether you're looking for tallow balms, deodorant, shampoo, soap, foundation, lipstick, skin tonics, eyeshadow, so much more, this is where you need to head. Emily dreams of women using her skincare with confidence, knowing that it is pure. I want you to go and try the frankincense tallow balm and feel that whipped, silky pleasure. Or try the red wine lipstick and enjoy feeling dressed up. The charcoal balm is amazing for cleaning skin and removing the day's makeup. And of course, make sure you try the glow serum, formulated from virgin, unrefined oils, which has raving 5-star reviews. Visit toopsandco.com to stock your bathroom and makeup case with these pure, beautiful products and use the coupon code HOMEMAKER for 10% off.
Mm-hmm. I think just like then, today we live in this age of extremes. I mean, extremes are really glorified. They make the magazine covers, they sell articles. And I think it's really easy for us to think, well, how could, you know, Jane has this like kind of overarching theme of moderation, of everything in moderation. So I think it's really easy for the modern woman or the modern person to look and go like, how could something as simple as moderation actually make a difference, you know, because we just live in this culture that's got headlines and green smoothie diets and all this crazy stuff coming at us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love how like you were, oh, I just kicked my camera. There I go, being a professional again. Regardless of the body type, kind of like you were just talking about, you also talk about the themes that run through these healthy people, meaning they sleep well, they have energy, they have a joyful demeanor, you know? And I think even if you just take those three things and stack up how you're feeling against it, and how often when that's not the case, I'll speak for myself, for example, when I don't have a joyful demeanor, my husband will always kick me outside, say like, go take a lap, you know, let's go for a walk down by the pond, or why don't you go garden for a little while, or, you know, go hang out with the chickens or whatever it may be, because there is something about that being outside. And I mean, what great news really for people. It's free. It's always there. You know, you just have to literally just have to walk outside. And I know we actually talked about this the last time you were on, this moderation of exercise, which is another, like, to me, exercise, I just equate it with just torture. It's torture. I despise it, but I love to dance. I love to garden. I love to swim. And you also mentioned the book. I don't remember which characters, but how they would dip into cold water.
Mm.
Which is something that Angela and I have actually been talking about quite a bit, is our little cold plunges. Right. How much more peace of mind would we have throughout our day if it was just, how can you sort of move? What can you move, put your hand to, be productive with your body today? What a great idea.
I think it also allows time for contemplation, and all of the characters that we would ascribe beauty to in the books, they're contemplative. They have room for their thoughts, you know, those walks and the things that they do when they're out in nature, like it allows headspace. And that improves the countenance, you know, gives you that bloom, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So I know that you're not like a homemaker in the same sense, maybe that Angela and I are, but how do you think, even what we've talked about so far, this sort of whole person idea of health, how do you think that's applicable to the average homemaker at home during the day? And Shay comes in swinging. Yeah, like,
the biggest open-ended question I've ever got.
Yeah. Well, I always love for somebody to be able to listen to this and say, well, what does this mean for me?
Right.
You know, what does this mean for me? Because ultimately that's how people listen to it anyway. They're thinking, man, I don't have any energy. Man, my attitude's pretty sour every day at 3:00. Man, I don't sleep well at all. Or I am obsessed with the number on the scale in the morning. So what do I go from here?
Right. Well,
it's not to torture you, I promise.
Yeah, I gotta think about this for a second. Because it's difficult because, like you see in the book, I mean, it's because there's so much. And I think that's why maybe I'm struggling with the question, because that's how people were trying to, I think, reduce it in the Regency era. Mm. And that's why it's not easy to pinpoint one thing. It's almost like, well, okay, now we have to, like, you know, talk about your entire life. Because I mean, that's why I titled it the Jane Austen diet, not as a term as in terms as like a joke, but you know, we have to understand the root, the original meaning of diet is way of life. And because it was, you know, it wasn't just what you put in your body or how you exercise. And this was, again, just starting to be so narrowed in Austen's era. And this isn't at all the classical way of thinking about health. And it's one, I think, really good place to start is understanding this and understanding that health is in classical medicine. And this is what Austen was operating under. Health is not something you have to worry about. It's not something that's going to you have to attain or achieve. It's something for most people, we are blessed that we have the seeds of health already in us. Like people, even going back to the Roman times, they saw that people were sort of like plants and that plants know how to grow. It's not like you have to hover obsessively over them. What you have to do is give them the right environment, you know, a bit of the right food, and they're going to thrive doing what they do. And people really, you know, before things started to get a little bit wacky with diets coming into the scene and stuff like that, this is what people truly believe, that, you know, you don't worry about your own health. And that's the most reassuring, heartening message here, is that Jane Austen's healthiest heroines, from Lizzie Bennet to, you know, Emma, the mark of a true heroine is not being obsessed about their own health. Only, and this is important to remember, only Austen's very comical and unhealthy characters obsess about their own health or obsess about their bodies as if they need to achieve health single-handedly. So you have characters like Mary Musgrove in Persuasion or Mr. Woodhouse in Emma. And these are people who are seriously body conscious and health conscious. I mean, they think they're doing their body good by being so obsessive about weight. But time and again, you know, Austen reminds us they have no energy level. You know, they aren't healthy in terms of her wide parameters of the term. And so that, I think, for me, that's been one of the most encouraging takeaways, is just, hey, you're healthy, your body, you know, your liver. I mean, just think about the miracle of your liver. I mean, it has more potent antioxidants than any superfruit you could ever eat. You know, your body has the tools to make you healthy. And Austen is just trying to, okay, say, now let's set up your environment where your like plant self is going to thrive, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing is, answering that environment question, then it gets a little, you know, it's a little complicated, not too complicated, but then you got to bring in those things like you got to reconnect with nature. You got to have a healthier relationship with food. You have to have a more gentle relationship with exercise and be, you know, and understand that your mind is as important as what you're putting into your body. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why it gets a little bit more convoluted after that. Yeah.
I made a huge change with COVID last year. I was, you know, at the gym every morning. I like to lift weights. I like to lift heavy weights. That came to a screeching halt with COVID. And it was, I mean, I'm not saying I won't ever go back to it because I do enjoy it, but I don't want to do that right now. The first thing I do in the morning, like I go outside every morning. And then I, you know, pour a cup of coffee. I go for a walk. I walk down the drive with my coffee. I set it on the road. I go on a 4-mile walk. I listen to the birds. I breathe the mossy air. It's incredible through the forest. That is not weightlifting. That is not worrying about the guy who showed up on the treadmill next to you. I mean, that's just like a completely different feeling, and it sets the tone for the day, and it enlivens me. It's not just the like the happy hormone endorphins that a good workout gives. This is like an overall feeling. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's from nature. And in your book, you talk about biophilia. And I'd love if you would explain that to our audience a little bit, because a homemaker who's, you know, a very repetitive life can get kind of trapped in the mundane. There's a lot of beautiful things, but there's a lot of grind, we call it here on the show. what this concept of biophilia might mean to her.
Yeah. Okay. So biophilia was coined, I believe, in the 1980s by a Harvard professor. Austin, of course, didn't know the term, but her books are literally teeming with this hypothesis. And it's the theory that, very logically, we humans are a part of nature itself. We are a part of the natural world. So we need routine contacts with nature in order to thrive. If not, our health mysteriously is going to suffer. And scientists really don't understand the full extent why we do suffer. But I mean, there's even something called this mysterious condition called sick building syndrome, where, you know, people's health, not even just their mood, but they're literally their physical health starts deteriorating when they are inside too long. And this is something that you actually do come across in Austin too. So what do you do? Like, you know, I mean, you know, Austin is not necessarily, you know, a gypsy. She's not a gypsy. She's not a hippie. She wasn't a hippie like tree hugger, of course. But so she does give some really unique solutions of how do you get out there? Because also during this time, you know, urbanization was starting to kick up. Mm-hmm. Austin knew what it was like to live in a very urban setting, how that deteriorated her own health. And she also knew the joys of being out in the countryside. But so how does just the average, I mean, I live in the suburbs. So, you know, how does someone like me do this? Well, the first thing is understanding the magic of air itself. And this is something that pops up time and time again in her novels. And air is almost seen as almost like a drug in Austin's novels. People are prescribed fresh air, like a prescription drug. In the book, one character is prescribed in Emma that she returned to her home place and that she just soak up some fresh air for a while. And this was a legitimate belief back in the day. They were, of course, operating under the pre-germ theory. They used to think that, you know, diseases were somehow imbued in the air itself. So you wanted to get a lot of fresh air. But Austin takes that kind of a step further, and she knows that there's a difference between air that's fresh and air that's gone foul, as she says. And her characters, you know, if there's a rainstorm, her characters will rush outside, Emma in particular, after a rainstorm, or they love to be by the seaside. I mean, that was a huge health trend during Austin's day. No one really understood how it works, but we actually do understand how it works today, especially, you know, either being outside after a rainstorm or being, you know, being near the seashore. The air during these times and at these places, it's charged differently. It's electrically charged differently, and there's a lot more negative ions in the air. And scientists are still trying to work out why negative ions make us feel so much better, but it seems to be that they help us transport oxygen to our brain a lot better than air inside. And it's just circulating, it's charged much differently. So there's that, you know, just take moments of and have yourself what Austin calls an airing. Like if you're in the car, turn off the AC, put the windows down. It's you know, it's going to be so much more helpful for your mm-hmm. both your psyche, for your mood. There's, you know, there's a reason why dogs like hang their heads out when when they're driving the car. Like they know something that, you know, we need to remember. And open your windows in your house as much as possible. This was a huge belief back then. You needed to recirculate the air in your house, or if not, it could go foul. So there's that. And there's also, there's also being around trees as much as possible. This is another big thing in the novels. If there's estates would always have what Austin calls a copse. So her heroines try to retreat to the copse as much as possible to meditate or just to have a quiet moment. Being around trees is important. And you know, this chimes, there's a huge forest bathing movement out of, it started in Japan. And there's many helpful reasons of trees just actually give off these incredible, magical, aromatic compounds that actually we breathe in, and they can increase our NK cells, the killer cells that sort of attack disease cells in our body. So there's all these crazy benefits of being around trees that you wouldn't necessarily assume, but they do make people feel better, and they are acting on your body actually on a very deep molecular level. Mm.
My body feels happier just you talking about it. Like yeah. It's can, you know, you're like trees. I'm like, oh, I feel good now. Seaside. Oh yeah. That's nice. One thing that kind of ties into what you were just saying, and I think this could be really relevant to the homemaker at home grinding it out, is how every heroine in an Austen novel takes an interval for some sort of quiet meditation, or as you say in the book, going off the mental grid.
Yeah.
And Angela and I often joke, you know, our lives are just so integrated with technology, and we're doing the podcast, and we're on YouTube, and we have these blogs, and we're, you know, running these communities, and there's so much plugged in. Mm-hmm. And when I take time off, I literally can just flip a switch, and it's shocking how easy it is for my mind to be like, we're done with that. Now we're going to go look at trees, and we're going to go watch frogs jump in the pond. And man, let's talk about the importance of just going off the mental grid. Like, what does that mean? That meant something different in Austen's era than it means in our era now. Is that something that you do? And or how do you do it?
I'm a work in progress for that one. But it's, why is it so hard to remind us to go silent? I don't know. And I'm such an introvert, so it should be easier for me. But for me, I know I have this productivity kind of slant. So I always think I should be doing something productive. So whether that's listening to something or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I mean, and the great thing is I'm awful at meditating. I think in the traditional kind of modern sense of the term, like if I try to be, okay, I'm going to be quiet for a second and just like, you know, empty my brain, it's not going to get empty. It's very difficult for me. So what I love about Austen's writings is that she has kind of a different take on meditation. She calls it meditation. They, mm-hmm. you know, her characters meditate, but it's not like an medication. It's literally just going to your room, not doing anything, and just, it's okay. Just think. You can let the thoughts come. It's fine to think. You know, we often think like in modern meditation that we ought to just empty ourselves. And I think it's okay. It's okay to think. It's how your brain needs periods of quiet, of true quiet to process the things. And mm-hmm. your brain may be going a mile a minute during these times. You know, that's healthy. That's your brain processing what it needs to do. And mm-hmm. researchers have done such excellent work with figuring this out and understanding that your brain actually can't process everything without these quiet moments. And it's why, you know, a lot of people, I know sometimes if I'm in the shower, in the bath, you know, times where you're forced to be quiet, sometimes you'll get your greatest ideas or, you know, some like this brilliant idea will pop into your head. And that is a direct result of your brain, you know, giving your brain that opportunity mm-hmm. for quiet. So it can just have a moment to think. So, you know, just it's very, you know, meditating in that sense is very easy. It's just turning off things and, you know, also turning off the calming music. I mean, another great study was done. Being quiet, being fully quiet is actually more restorative and more rejuvenating to people than listening to calming music. It kind of sounds counterintuitive, but it is, it's been proven. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find like, when I go out to the garden, that's sort of how I, again, not the new age version, but that's how I quote meditate. Just that's how I have my quiet time. And a lot of times especially if I'm in a good book, like I'll put in my earbuds and I'll listen to some music or I'll listen to a podcast. And there's a place for that. But I think of these quiet times, as you spoke, like going off the mental grid means to me, not really bringing anything else in. Even if that's music or a good book or even something you find relaxing, a phone conversation with your friend, you're still bringing stuff in. And so I sort of see this as a place of just taking what's already in there and just sort of chewing on it a bit, having some time to swirl it around in there.
Yeah. And this is why I think I'm just starting to appreciate the beauties of Sundays, or, you know, any day actually in your week that you could take a day of rest and also rest your or weary brain, you know, like from, I mean, and it's there for a reason, and it's been historically there for a reason. And I'm only now, you know, at 34, now regaining a true appreciation for it. That's something that, you know, Austin and her contemporaries would have been much better at following than we are. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, you know, a lot of our listeners are mothers. And as you're talking, these are all things that we would prescribe for our children. I don't know, heard or maybe stumbled upon in your research. There's a great book called Last Child in the Woods.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, it's about how badly children need to just be outside. And I parent in a way, and I know Shay does as well, where we try to give our children this arena to have pockets of non-stimulation so that they can use their imagination and have headspace to come up with ideas. And there's so many things you're saying that I think the mothers listening perhaps put towards their children and haven't adopted those methods or seen the need for themselves.
Do you know how often I just shove my kids in the shower when they're a hot mess? I'm like, you're going to take a shower. You're going to clean this up now. You're going to come out, put on some clean underwear, drink a glass of water, go to the bathroom.
Right.
And it's like, turns out that's the cure for like 95% of what ails them.
Right. Cold glass of water.
Love that. Yeah.
A good scrubbing.
A good, just scrub that off. Okay, we have to talk about the Austin Eats Bread section. Am I understanding this right? That you're a trained chef?
I am. Yeah.
Tell me about this.
I realized that the other day we were reading the book together. I'm like, oh my gosh, how did we miss that? This whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was 4 years in culinary school up in New York, up in the Culinary Institute of America. So that was me for 4 years at one point in my life.
What, like, wow. do you cook now, or is it just for yourself? Like, you're just
For myself, for my family. Yeah, that's it. I even going into culinary school, I knew I didn't want to take the traditional restaurant or hotel path. Funny enough, I thought for darn sure I was going to go into food magazines and kind of work behind the scenes there. And when that didn't pan out after graduation, I actually did an internship at one food magazine. But when it didn't pan out for a viable career, that's when I had a couple ideas for books. It actually started with children's cookbooks, and that was my little pinky toe into writing, and that's how it started for me. It's been sort of a miracle ride since then, because my education, of course, is in food, and I was 4 years there. I spent pretty much all of my free time in the library researching the things that actually were more important to me than just racing against the clock and, you know, restaurant cooking. That's when I actually started, funny enough, to fall in love with the food scenes of classic literature. That was the nugget for me of that's how I came to classic literature. And that was that was the root of my passion for it. And it's kind of blossomed since then.
Well, a big piece of that you talk about in the book, again, going back to this whole person approach, is yes, it's what they're eating, because Austin eats bread and Austin eats stuff from the garden, right? And Austin eats cheese and like all these amazing things. But Austin, like her, a lot of the food scenes, or so I've gathered, are people together.
Yeah.
And you have the quote in the book that said, it's such a happiness when good people get together. And A, obviously, some people have been really missing out on this last year. Mm-hmm. And I think our culture is just desperately missing out on this in general. Mm-hmm. We had a new family at church. I love this story now because they're some of our dearest friends. But when they came to church. We had, you know, hi, how are you? Where are you from? Blah, blah. They left. And Cody said to Amber, he's like, we're never going back to that church. And she said, why? And he goes, because people just talk to you. Like they don't, they just like won't leave you alone. Mm-hmm. But he was just sort of used to that anonymous, huge church where you can pop in, sit in the back. No one talks to you. You go about your business. And our church is so small that when there's somebody new there, where they were like, ooh, exciting. And everyone's over introducing themselves. Well, another huge shock for him was that we are a church who eats together, like a lot. So, you know, we've talked about here on the podcast before, we don't just open up our table to our church family, but we dine with people or eat with people probably 3 or 4 times a week. Wow. Like it's a very lively sort of fellowship schedule, which I love. It's a great thing for our family. But that's not a cultural norm at all. I think a lot of people think it's actually really weird to have a family over to your house or to go out with a friend, maybe.
And just to eat as a family.
Even just to eat as a family.
I've said like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. it's kind of frightening because it used to be throughout most of history, we've needed other humans to not entertain. Entertain's too of a cheap word, but to keep us, like you said, to keep us company, to keep us occupied, to keep, you know, us from going insane. Now we have our TVs or our computers or our phones. And that is such a small glitch in this massive history and time. It's not funny. And so, I mean, for like you mentioned, so when it comes to food, you know, we've been programmed to almost think of food in two ways. Either food is pure pleasure, like for those who eat to live, or it's fuel, you know, to those who live to eat, mm-hmm. or whatever. I got mm-hmm. that reversed, but yeah, mm-hmm. vice versa. That's kind of it. We've forgotten there's actually another component to it. And there's always been another component. And it's that food is the binder of relationships. It's one of the, you know, it's one of the main, it's not the main, but it's one of those binders of relationships. And this was such, oh gosh, this was so important to Austin. I mean, people in that era, and Austin writes about this, they prided themselves of how many chairs their dining room table could fit. And the more, literally the merrier, you know, and it, mm-hmm. and the art of hospitality was elevated to a great extent back then. And the thing is, so whenever there's, and this helps just for our own personal kind of selfish health in a way, because whenever there's an abundance of food in Jane Austen's novels, whenever there's like a windfall of apples or a lot of pork or a goose going around, you know, what do? The first thing, they invite friends over to share it. And it's sort of single-handedly avoiding that temptation for isolated overeating. You know, if there's an abundance of something, of course you share it with someone else. You do not just hog and scarf that thing down by yourself. Mm. Some characters do in the book, and they are decidedly the bad characters and the unhealthy characters who do that. But yeah, I mean, there's one of my favorite studies that was done. It was actually done out of, I believe it was back in the 80s, but it was looking at a town. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, called Rosetta, Pennsylvania. And in that town, they kind of drank heavily. They smoked a lot. It was primarily a grouping of Italian immigrants, but it was kind of an enclave, and they were detached from other towns. And so for a while there, they were sort of just operating as if they were, you know, living in an Italian village in America. And they were always constantly in each other's kitchens. They were, you know, always in each other's business and blah, blah, blah. What researchers started noticing is that they seemed completely immune. Like they smoked all the time. They weren't getting cancer. You know, they drank all the time. They seemed fine with that. And the only thing, it's a remarkable study. The only thing that they could identify was their close social bonds, that they were in a mysterious way keeping all of these folks living much longer and much healthier lives than other people in other towns around the area that didn't have those kind of connections. And it's like such a safety net. And it does break my heart, because my family are, you know, we were big in hospitality, but we know no one that is. So we're like, you know, we invite people over to the house. Nobody invites. It's yeah. very sad. It's so, you know, it's for Shay. I mean, it's such a blessing what you have. I mean, it's a huge gift that is so rare in our world today. The sort of bubbles that everyone is operating under these days, it kind of boggles the brain. It really does. Mm-hmm. Because that's not sustainable. And I mean, you see the rise in depressions, and, you know, we wonder where those things are rising from, you know, and it doesn't take, yeah. you know, much of a scientist to figure out like yeah. what's missing. We don't have, you know, people aren't so much in our business, and we feel like that's a blessing, but it's not.
Yeah. Turns out other people can be really good for you sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think we've sort of sold ourselves to the very cheap knockoff version, right? So we don't have to be alone. It's like, well, I can watch Netflix while I eat by myself, and my kids can have their iPads and they can watch what they'd like while we, you know, and everyone can be in their own little bubble. And it might be more comfortable at first, because I'll tell you, when I was learning how to have people over, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, it was awkward. You know, you have to actually train yourself how to do it, and train yourself to get to the point where you're just like, yeah, come on, like pull up a chair. You
know, right. I don't have to. Yeah. I mean, for me too. I mean, so coming from a food background, I for years was like almost terrified of having people over, because I felt like they were expecting Michelin star meals, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But I think that's not just a personal dilemma. I think, you know, with food magazines and all these cooking shows, and they're like presented so immaculately, we feel, you know, we're having to operate up to that standard. And it's a ridiculous standard. It's a fake standard. It doesn't exist in life. And, you know, what I've discovered is people, you can give them a cold hot dog and they're just happy.
Yeah,
they're
it's happy. True.
They are grateful and happy. Most people are grateful and happy just to be there and to be invited, because it's such a rare thing. So honestly, make whatever you are making for your family, and that be that, you know, and don't try to impress. That's another, you know, that's another, I think, area of bondage in a way, that we keep ourselves from even inviting somebody over, because we're trying to create this world that actually doesn't exist, you know?
Yep. And again, forgetting
interest worthy.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous. It's not
right.
Life.
Yeah.
And forgetting the most important thing, which is literally fellowship with your fellow man. Like, that's
vitality.
Yeah. That's the point. That's the whole point. I think, I mean, I could write a book on that. Just that, just being together, the happiness of when good people get together and share in something. And I think that's what, I mean, you guys, we've already gone like 10 minutes over. This went, went very quickly. Oh,
because I gotcha. Because whatever.
I mean, that's my favorite part about this whole book, is to me, it's a softening of all these sort of cultural edges that
absolutes.
And like you were saying, like the really dramatic ends of the spectrum, and you're sort of just bringing it in and saying like, let's just say on that, like, let's just keep it between the rails. Let's just soften it all. Our views that is diet important? Yes, but let's sort of soften that significantly. Is, you know, size, your appetite, energy, sleep, any of these things, but just like bringing it into this home, soft, beautiful space and allowing it to just thrive in health there, instead of trying to make it this just monstrous task, you know? And so, ladies, do check this book out, The Jane Austen Diet. And also, Brian, we didn't tell you this before we started recording, but we would like to give away a signed copy of the book. So that means you have to sign one for us. Will you do that for us?
Yeah, I'll sign it and I'll send it out if you want me to.
Fabulous. That would be great. That would be great. So, Angela, I forget. How did you want to do this? I think I'm forgetting how. I think we were going to do it over on Patreon. So head on over to Patreon. Okay. You tell them.
Okay. Well, what we want to do is, because so many of you are enjoying the video version of the podcast, and we want you to see this dapper vest that Brian is wearing.
Yes.
We want you to get a feel for what it's like to enjoy.
He's probably very hot in Florida.
Right. Normally, our video versions are available to our fangirl tiers. We are going to make this episode available to everyone. So head on over to patreon.com. The video version will be up for the weekend. Remember, they always come a couple days after the, you know, iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening. Leave a comment. We're going to draw a winner from the comments over on Patreon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Patreon.com/homemakerschic podcast. Yes. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I feel like there's so much, like, we didn't even get to talk about intermittent fasting, which I started doing after reading this book. And like, she doesn't call it that, but just this idea of lingering out, going, taking a brisk walk before you eat your breakfast, or letting your body sort of wake up a little bit before you feed it caffeine. We didn't even like
that. I employed that tactic since reading the book. That makes a huge difference. I've been giving myself 30 minutes instead of just like stumbling, because I get up really, Shay and I both get up really early, you know, 4:45 or whatever. I just stumble down and hit buttons for the Americano. I've been waiting, stepping outside, waiting a while, then making the coffee. It makes a really big difference.
Yeah. It's allowing your body to wake up naturally without the aid of a trigger like caffeine or food or,
So much good stuff to dive into, Brian. Thanks for coming back on.
You're welcome. Oh my goodness. Thank you for having me. This was a nice invite. Yeah. Thank you.
Also,
keep having you back, but we're going to need you to write another book.
No, I'm working on this one. We should have a conversation about letter writing, Brian, because I have upped my stationery. You have a letter coming in the mail, actually.
Really?
From both Georgia and myself. And we went and got some new stationery just for you. So I hope that you appreciate it when it arrives.
I did just get Georgia's second letter the other day.
So she's a very aggressive pen paler. Like, if you give her your address, buyer beware.
Oh my goodness.
She's so wonderful. But we found this great little sticker book at a local paper shop here, and it had some sort of Austin inspired figurines that were actually taken from, stickers from the time, or like stamps from the time. Anyway, so we included some of those as well. A little nod to the Jane Austen diet for you. So look for that. It's in the mail, quite literally.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Head on over to patreon.com/homemakerschic podcast so that you can watch our interview with Brian, and so that you can enter in the giveaway for a signed copy of the Jane Austen diet. And then, of course, make sure you join us for Ultra Feminine Friday tomorrow over on Instagram. Show us what you're wearing. Show us what Ultra Feminine Friday looks like for you. And make sure you use the hashtag Ultra Feminine Friday and tag us so that we can share it in our stories as well. And head on over to the website, homemakerschicpodcast.com. Scroll to the bottom, enter your email address to sign up for the newsletter, and we will email out the show notes with all of this information, including a link to Brian's book when this is all published and good to go. Did I miss anything?
I think you summed that up nicely.
Okay. All right, ladies. Thanks for joining us for season 7. As we see the beautiful together, we'll see you Monday. Cheers.